The Pain Pod is produced by Bloodstream Media and is intended for informational and educational purposes only, and is made possible thanks to our sponsor, Trimo Pharmaceuticals. Visit resethastudy.com to learn more about their work.
People seem to only care when someone gets acutely ill or is terminally ill, and there's millions of people who are left in the middle.
Have you ever felt excluded, ignored, or even outright neglected? Life. It can sometimes feel like you are sitting in the middle seat of a very, very long plane ride, squeezing yourself into a spot that was most certainly an afterthought. A view of the outside world is near impossible, and getting up to stretch or use the restroom, well, that's bound to be a whole thing. For people with chronic illness, life can feel like a very, very long plane ride, with limited views, space, and resources. In a society that favors evolving technology and scientific advancements in the field of acute and terminal illness, long-lasting conditions like chronic illness and chronic pain can often get overlooked. In this episode, we take a closer look at the pain experience through the lens of chronic illness, and finally give focus to those who might feel stuck in the middle. Hi, I'm Mel Forrest, and you're listening to The Pain Podcast.
My name is Erica Lupinacci, and I have lupus. I'm an experienced chronic chest pain and muscle pain and chronic migraines.
Erica has lupus, which is a long-term autoimmune disease where the body's immune system attacks normal healthy tissue, causing inflammation and pain in any part of the body. Anyone can develop lupus, but it predominantly affects women and women of color between the ages of 15 and 44. Erica is an advocate for those with chronic illness and shares her own journey and pain experience.
It takes a very long time to get diagnosed with lupus for many reasons. There's not one test that you take that tells you that you have it. You kind of have to be the right amount of sick for all of your blood work to show that you have lupus. So basically, that's what happened to me. They had tested me for lupus prior to my diagnosis, but I wasn't sick enough.
Wait a moment. Did I hear that right? I'm sorry to interrupt, but the idea of not being sick enough really sticks with me. How does a person prove that they are the right amount of sick? And how much pain do you have to be in to get adequate testing?
It definitely takes a long time, especially because it's an autoimmune disease in which the symptoms overlap with a lot of other autoimmune diseases and other diseases. But also, lupus primarily affects women and women of color. So obviously there are a lot of barriers for women in general and women of color to get the care, diagnosis, and have people listening to them and trusting them.
Venturing out on a long journey alone can feel overwhelming. You might meet people along the way, but who do you trust? How will others perceive you? What happens if you need help, and will it be lonely? The chronic illness journey is no different. Finding people you trust and getting adequate care takes time, and the start isn't always so smooth.
First experienced symptoms when I was 15, which was 15 years ago. And at the beginning, I was experiencing flu symptoms. I was having some joint pain, but it wasn't extreme amounts of pain where I had to be treated with pain meds or anything like that. I was misdiagnosed with ankylosing spondylitis, and they said I had fibromyalgia, which I do have as well.
Ankylosing spondylitis is an inflammatory disease that can cause bones in the spine to fuse over time. This fusing makes the spine less flexible and can cause a shift in posture and make it difficult to breathe. It affects men more than women, and signs and symptoms typically begin in early adulthood.
I think at that point they just wanted to give me some answers and just slapped on some things that sort of described what I was going through. It wasn't the complete picture, but I was tested for everything under the sun. It took until I had fluid surrounding my heart and lungs that had been there for quite some time because I kept getting turned away at the ER or at a doctor just telling me that I was having a muscle spasm when it was really my heart and lungs that were involved. So I was experiencing huge amounts of pain at that point.
I just want to take one moment to digest this. Earlier, Erica spoke about the notion of not being sick enough for a diagnosis. But even when she was in huge amounts of pain from fluid surrounding her heart and lungs, it was still hard to prove that she was actually sick enough.
When they finally figured out what was going on, I was hospitalized.
It seems that the way society and the outside world perceives you, whether it's based on age, race, gender, ethnicity, and so forth, can have an effect not only on the way you yourself experience pain, but your access and treatment to care.
They were testing me for everything and then finally diagnosed with lupus. It took about 3 years for me to get diagnosed.
From the time a person first notices their symptoms, it can take on average 6 years to be diagnosed with lupus. That's a long time to go without a diagnosis, without being believed.
Being 15, not knowing what's wrong with you, having your friends not really understand, your teachers don't understand, I was just extremely depressed. It was a very confusing time.
Pediatric pain expert Dr. Lonnie Zeltzer states that chronic pain at any age carries a stigma. But the younger you are, especially when you're forming your identity, you don't want to identify yourself as a person who has chronic pain. So there's a tendency for a lot of adolescents to be secret sufferers. Erica was 15 when she began experiencing chronic pain due to chronic illness. At such an important age, I was curious to know if both chronic illness and chronic pain influenced or shaped her identity.
I think because it took so long to get diagnosed, when I initially received the diagnosis, I was so relieved. I wasn't sad, I wasn't mad. I was just so happy that I had an answer that felt like it explained what was actually going on. I kind of rode that high for a few years and I think didn't really understand how it was going to affect me and influence my life. And because I got diagnosed in the spring of my senior year of high school, so I went right to college, somehow made it through college. And I think it wasn't until I graduated and started living life on my own that I understood how this was going to impact me. And it's interesting because I think it was understanding that this was going to deeply impact my life in a sad way. I wasn't going to be able to do some of the things that I wanted to do, or I was going to have to do them differently, or it was going to affect my relationships, all of that. I think about how chronic illness and pain affects the identity because there's always this discourse in the chronic illness and disability community. And there's some people that believe I am not my illness. It does not define me. And then I'm in the camp of it completely defines me. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but there's no way for it to not define me because it dictates every aspect of my life and how I live my life. I don't think it's in an unhealthy way that I so deeply define or connect with lupus. There's just no way for me personally to separate it from my identity. But I think also because I got diagnosed so young, it's just so much a part of me that it's very difficult to separate that.
Erica talks support systems, variances in the pain experience, and access to care when we return after this brief word about our sponsor.
The Pain Pod is produced by Bloodstream Media and made possible thanks to our sponsor, Tremo Pharmaceuticals.
When you're in between and kind of the shades of gray between extreme pain or no pain, it's a lot of what you experience is defined by what's going on in your life around you.
This is Travis Helm. He's the Senior Director of Regulatory Affairs and Operations at Tremo.
When I think about pain, it's a very individual experience. I can be more quick to get frustrated with people or more quick to become angry or have less tolerance for things.
For Travis, pain can be expressed not just through words, but through actions.
I try to think of myself as somebody who's very patient and very accommodating. And when you're in pain, that patience really can dwindle. And I get frustrated with myself if I'm in pain.
This frustration can have a bit of a snowball effect too.
That can lead to other secondary aspects of pain, whether it's that depressive side of things that really can be so challenging for folks who end up in chronic pain.
Multiple factors contribute to the way a person experiences and perceives pain. So I asked Travis if he could wave a magic wand and change one thing about the way someone experiences pain, what would it be?
You just don't want your fellow man to be suffering. And so even if it's for a day, you can take it away. That's a better day than they would have had. I hope that people can have less suffering in their life.
My name is Patrick James Lynch, and I have severe hemophilia A. As someone living with hemophilia and arthritis in my joints, I know firsthand how difficult and debilitating chronic pain can be. I also know the challenges that come with trying to find relief, which is why I'm excited to share with you the RESET HA study from Tremo. Tremo was founded with the goal of developing and delivering non-opioid pain therapies for people living with pain. Tremo's RESET HA study is a clinical research study for people who experience joint pain due to hemophilia. The study is evaluating an oral non-opioid investigational drug designed to be taken once a day to see if it may potentially help relieve joint pain and improve physical function in people with hemophilic arthropathy, or HA. You may be eligible to participate in this clinical research study if you are between the ages of 12 and 75, have been diagnosed with hemophilia A or B, have chronic pain in one or more joints, and do not take opioid medication more than 4 days a week. If you are interested in learning more about the RESET HA study, visit resethastudy.com. That's RESETHASTUDY.com to find a study location near you. Reset the way you manage your pain. Visit resethastudy.com today.
Feeling seen and supported can be hard when you're stuck in the middle. Having a long-lasting illness and pain can make everyday life a bit more complicated. Erica Lupinacci reflects on the support systems that validated and lifted her up along the way.
I have a support system, especially with my medical team and my parents and my girlfriend and my friends. I see a therapist since I was going through all of this, and that is extremely helpful. I'm very lucky to have that.
A comprehensive care approach can be an important part of managing chronic pain and illness. No two people are alike, and the ways in which a person manages and treats their condition is going to look a little different than someone else's. It's important to look at all of the factors that contribute to pain and illness. As a member of the LGBTQIA+ community and a chronic illness and disability advocate, Erica talks about the variances in the pain experience, as well as the variances in access to care based on a person's identity.
I'm fully aware of the privilege that I have as a white woman who had good health insurance and a supportive family and the money to navigate this and go to the doctors I needed to go to. But even just speaking to different people in our community, I think about navigating the healthcare system as a trans person and what goes into that. And there's such a lack of understanding and support there in the medical community. again, you know, lupus primarily affects women of color, and speaking to women of color and their experience, like navigating a hospital ER visit or something like that. A lot of people don't have access to the mental health care that they need. And I wish it was more accessible for people. And I wish that it was more of a focus when you are chronically ill, that someone is talking about how to support yourself that way. And my experience, people seem to only care when someone gets acutely ill or is terminally ill, and there's millions of people who are left in the middle. There's absolutely a lot of work to be done.
Through her personal experience, Erica wanted to find a way to advocate and amplify stories of those with chronic illness, moving them out of the middle and into the forefront. She is the co-founder and director of outreach for Suffering the Silence.
Suffering the Silence is a nonprofit that I co-founded with Ali Cashel. We raise awareness and share the stories of people living with chronic illness and disability through a variety of different programming and online advocacy.
Ali Cashel is also co-founder and president of Suffering the Silence. Ali and Erica are longtime friends who both have chronic illness. Erica talks about Suffering the Silence's beginnings and its overall mission.
When we started back in 2015, we initially launched the organization, which at that time was existing as just an online community, and we didn't imagine it becoming a full-fledged nonprofit. But we began with a campaign that was portraits of various people living with chronic illnesses with their disease written on their arm, with their arm covering their mouth, as a way of picturing people breaking their silence about these conditions and what it means to live with them. And then from there, we've evolved into doing more campaigns of people speaking about their experience and a short docuseries about people living with chronic illness. We used to do in-person retreats. We are on pause with those at the moment, so we've been doing those virtually. And now we just launched a grant program for chronically ill and disabled artists.
Chronic disease is often referred to as an invisible illness, but just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not there. More than 133 million people suffer from chronic illness in the U.S. alone. 133 million. That's a not-so-small amount of people that continually get overlooked, whose ongoing experience of pain is shaped by their chronic illness and the way it is perceived and treated by society. But making it visible by sharing individual stories will hopefully make it harder to ignore. This type of advocacy work and representation is crucial to Erica and Suffering the Silence.
I don't think that there would be a change without people advocating, because it's just easier to not have to change, and it's easier to just exist and function as you are doing and as the medical system has been for years and years and years. It's absolutely thanks to the disability advocates who have been working on this forever. And I really do think with social media, just people connecting with one another and learning to speak about their story and feeling empowered to share their story and in a way that feels honest and true to them.
In a society that favors evolving technology and scientific advancements in the fields of acute and terminal illness, those within the chronic illness community are using social media and technology as a tool to increase connectivity and empowerment. Having agency over your own story and being given a platform to tell it truthfully validates your experience and opens the door for more important conversations that can facilitate growth and progress. In many ways, this past year and a half has brought much growth and progress. But truth be told, the pandemic hit the chronically ill community especially hard. Erica touches on the frustrations that this time has brought and expands upon her hopes for the future.
I haven't been able to do a lot of these things because of the pandemic, and I don't know when I'm going to be able to do them again. But I am an actor, I am a producer. That's what I want to do with my life, and I love it so much. But those things are obviously greatly affected by my health, and they dictate how I can do them. And, you know, an ultimate goal is to increase awareness in media and in film and TV about chronic illness, because there really is absolutely nothing that exists that talks about it or represents it in a good way. Short docuseries came out about a year and a half ago, and that was one of the most important things that I've done in my life, but it was so difficult because there is so little representation in media that I felt so much pressure because I just wanted people to feel represented. So there needs to be more, and that is something that I want to do in my own performance and producing and all of that, is help increase awareness.
Everyone's illness, pain, and story is different. And if 133 million people suffer from chronic illness in the US alone, then that's a lot of people who are stuck in the middle. Increasing representation increases awareness, and the more it is seen and heard, the harder it becomes to ignore. Having pain due to chronic illness is a long journey, made more complicated by the way it is perceived and treated in society. But one thing is for certain: no one should feel like they are left in the middle. If you'd like to hear and learn more about Erica Lupinacci and Suffering the Silence, you can visit www.sufferingthesilence.com.
I think that with every sport, there's a certain level of expectation.
We talk about the glorification of pain next time on The Pain Pod. The Pain Podcast is written and hosted by me, Mel Forrest. Produced by Greg Holtzman. Edited by Colby Crow. Artwork by Ryan Gielen and Christina Newhard. Post-production support from Joshua Sterling Bragg, Rob Bradford, Allison Stoney, and Avra Friedman. And executive produced by Patrick James Lynch. The Pain Pod is produced by Bloodstream Media and presented by Tremo Pharmaceuticals. Tremo's Reset HA study is a clinical research study for people who experience joint pain due to hemophilia, and you can learn more about it by visiting resethastudy.com. And as always, if you liked this episode, make sure to subscribe, rate, and share The Pain Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Mel Forrest, and we'll be back next time with episode 5 of The Pain Pod.